we just stay in and watch The Sopranos?
Go.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 10, Episode 15, Fertile Ground. And now here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Hello.
Are you ready to talk about people's sperm?
Boy, am I.
Stop crossing
well,
the streams.
Well, we can't get to that.
Ew, Dave.
Sadly, sperm is far in the future for us. First, we have to deal with two other plot lines. Starting with our C-plot, Gina teen stuff. Gina alone is playing Jenga with straws on her glass at the club instead of leaving. This is an option that is available to you.
What is wrong with these people? Just go home.
Just go home. I mean, we've already established The Sopranos has premiered at this point in the timeline. Go home and watch it.
Yeah, really.
It's crazy to think they were both on the air at the same time, though.
I know. I really had to think about that. I was like, but where are we actually in that? Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It had been on for a minute.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, enough about good shows. When Dylan shows up to give Gina the business card of a guy from the hotel who works for the Super Sports Channel, he has talked Gina up to him and they are hiring. Gina's stuck on the last job opportunity she had, which he ruined for her. And Dylan just ignores that and says whether she calls this other dude or not is up to her. So evidently she has swallowed her pride and gone to interview with Russell, this connection of Dylan's that we can tell he's a dick because she's sitting in an armchair and he's looming over her asking questions. Weird. Also present is Michael, a sulky teen with a Diet Coke and a pre-puberty voice, complaining that this is boring. He is right. Russell knows all about Gina's career and could use someone like her on the broadcast, but he needs her to do something for him first. And since Michael is there, we may reasonably assume that thing is not to suck his dick. But at that point, Michael loudly sips from his straw and Russell insults him for being lazy. And here's where Gina comes in. Russell wants her to train Michael. His school winter carnival dance is in 3 days, and so is the journalism job of a lifetime. Really not sure what a guy who works for a sports channel thinks she's going to be able to accomplish in 3 days, but I guess. Of course, Gina is a hustler, so when we see her next, she's brightly encouraging Michael on a walk through a park. But things quickly decline from there. Clip two.
You think if I lost any weight, my dad would be happy about it?
Oh, kid, look, I really don't care whether or not your father is happy, but I would have a great job. See, that's why I'm doing this.
Ever since my mom died, my dad's been a total control freak. I get less than an A-minus on a test, I'm punished. I don't learn a new piece on the piano fast enough, I'm punished. My mom let me get my ear pierced when I turned 13, but no way he'll let me wear an earring.
Look, I really need this job. I don't know if you understand that.
Yeah, you can't talk to a kid that way. He's, like, pouring his heart out to you about some pretty serious stuff with his, like, borderline abusive dad. This is not about you right now.
Well, I mean, I at least respect that she stayed in character and didn't pretend that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She does need the job, and it's very on brand for Gina to be like, okay, right, but I need this job. Like, that's, I mean, it's very Gina, so.
True. Anyway, then she feels bad and runs after Michael to tell him he'd look great with an earring and urge him to spend the rest of his speed walk thinking about how to tell Russell he wants one, which is better. That's a better way to frame your answer.
I think so.
A chipper Gina shows up the next day to get Michael, excited because she thinks they made progress during their last session. But Russell says she was hired to train Michael's body, not his mind, and how Russell chooses to parent is none of her business. And Michael went out on his own to get his ear pierced and now puts Gina on the spot to tell Russell she thinks he looks great. And she dodges that it's not really her place to say and then feels like a shit for selling him out. Russell gives her $200 to pay for the training she already did. She reminds him that she'd said she'd bill him at the end of the month, but he says that won't be necessary. She pushes her luck by asking about the TV job, but of course he filled it this morning. So Gina recaps the whole relationship to Dylan at the club that night. Leave it to the professionals. No surprise, she took it personally because she thinks Russell is the same as Bobby in terms of being very pushy and critical.
Bobby's personality ever shifting because they never paid this actress and we can't really see what she was actually like.
Yeah.
Cool.
Also, just a reminder that in all of the stuff about Gina's biological parentage, Bobby has not appeared, which is not normal. So then it's Saturday and Gina comes to Russell's house to pick Michael up for their date to the dance. If he's not grounded, she thinks Russell should let Michael go out. She understands that kids need discipline, but they also need to have fun and a little freedom, and tells Russell that Bobby didn't understand that. Like, Russell doesn't care. She's ready to walk away when Russell stops her to say that Michael had a great mom and Russell has had a hard time since she died. Gina thinks maybe he should try listening to Michael more. Who cares? We don't know either of these people. Quit filling time. But then Gina escorts Michael to the dance. Clip 3.
Is my dad still giving you a job?
No, he's not.
Then why are you doing this for me?
Because no one ever did it for me. And you're cute.
I mean, I guess that's gross, but it was a sweet moment.
And then
Dylan shows up and is really cute. And that's literally the only payoff in this whole storyline, but it's a pretty good one.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a while since we said nothing nice about him, so he looks really cute. Even his hair looks good.
Yeah, and it looks sort of like reminiscent of that, like it's the modified Sydney Opera House from like old school spring dance days. Yeah, he looked very foxy in that scene.
Agree. Also notable is that the girl that Michael has a crush on is a little baby Ashley Tisdale from High School Musical. So you can see her in the visual aids, too.
Aw.
And she dances with Michael and everyone's happy. The end. On to the B plot. Steve's sexual history retcon stuff. Steve and Janet get home from a date and celebrate the silence thanks to Darby, but then walk in on Noah and Darby in the living room, having clearly been interrupted fooling around. Like, Darby's shirt is inside out and backwards. We get it. The hair would have been enough. She apologizes and races off to check on Maddie, and Noah promises they had the baby monitor on the whole time, and Janet orders him out of the house. The next day, Noah finds Steve at the Peach Pit to say he ended things with Darby. Steve wants to know if Darby said anything about having been with Steve in the past, and Noah guesses correctly that Steve did not tell Janet. Noah says maybe Darby forgot about Steve, which Steve doesn't think is possible. Noah says this, clip 4.
Okay.
It's every funny. That's then, a good line reading. Dave, play that again.
Every now
it's
and then, Vincent Young, like, do you want to get a beer? No. All right.
Yep. It's one of those comet moments. I need to hear it again. Please play clip 4.
Okay. we're really grasping with this episode, folks. Yeah. Just give us this.
So Noah kindly says Steve is probably the best Darby's ever had, but since he was so epic, maybe he should tell Janet before Darby does. And Steve has a lot to think about. What I'm thinking about is, when was this? When did this happen?
Yeah.
Because wasn't he with Claire, like, starting in, I guess he didn't have a girlfriend in his freshman year, so maybe she was, like, an off-screen trick, but he was with Claire for most of college.
Yeah, and then there was a bunch of time taken up with Crazy Laura, so.
Right.
Maybe it was during the Crazy Laura period.
Perhaps.
Or no one in the writer's room remembers anything that happened before season 7. Probably the answer.
Probably that. Steve is just walking by Matt's room when he has to make it weird. Maddie's room when he has to make it weird by darting away as soon as he sees that Darby's leaning over the crib. Obviously, she catches him, and then he makes it even weirder by starting to ask if she remembers a certain keg party, which is when Janet and her very shiny shirt come in with the baby, and Steve sends Darby to the kitchen. When they're done, Janet tells Steve she really likes Darby, but now feels like Maddie's world is contaminated. She wants to know why Noah had to go after Darby, so Steve says Darby went after him. Janet doubts it, since that's Noah's version of events, but Steve says she doesn't know Darby like he does, and then admits that he belatedly remembered having sex with Darby at a frat party, but also says he hasn't talked to Darby about this. And Janet is sufficiently annoyed not to hand the baby over to him. And the next day, Janet is still fact-checking Steve's Darby timeline. When they interviewed Darby, he genuinely didn't remember boning her and figures she didn't mention it because she wanted the job, not even crediting Noah's quite legitimate suggestion that she forgot Steve's magic crank just as he forgot her magic vagina. Janet then wants to know what Noah said about Darby that jogged Steve's memory, and he tells her about the trademark hickey. And then Darby comes in, and without preamble, Janet tells Darby she can't look after Janet's child if Janet doesn't trust her. Darby thinks she's fired for boning Noah while Maddie was sleeping, but Janet says the issue is that she misrepresented herself, and Darby doesn't think it's a big deal that she claimed to be a virgin or whatever when she wasn't, but Janet says the problem is that she wasn't honest. Darby, getting heated, asks if she should have given Janet a list of the guys she slept with, and Steve breaks in here to say she could have mentioned that he was on it, and Darby has no idea what he's talking about and thinks Steve has just been fantasizing about her and once she's stomped out, Steve is all wounded about being so forgettable, which, point to Darby.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was waiting for there to be some kind of reveal to where he, like, mixed her up with someone else on the gymnastics team, but it's, you know, there's really no payoff to the story at all.
Yeah. I mean, unsurprisingly, because this is like once Steve and Janet finally get together, this is the kind of bullshit that you have to they have to sit through with their storylines.
Yeah. Anyway, at the end of their plot line here, Janet and Steve end up at the carousel where Steve brought her on their seventh date. She remembers because it was when she fell in love with him. She didn't expect him to remember that because a moment that was big for her might not have been so for him, much as it was with him boning Darby, except that it wasn't a big moment for him either because he also forgot her. This is much kinder to Steve's feelings than he deserves, but he is duly touched. Ugh.
Who cares?
Well, there's more episode to get to, but first, we have a message for Laura from Laura.
Laura is celebrating her 50th birthday on June 11th, and among her other interests, she loves going to baseball games. My people.
Laura also observes birthday month, as the Lord intended, so we hope she'll get a chance to attend a few games during that time. And for her birthday, we've compiled a list of 4 reasons she should not attend a baseball game with the gang, and 1 very good reason she should.
Number 1. Steve always gets and generously shares those sweet celebrity spawn front row tickets, but that's how you get beamed with a foul ball or a flipped bat or mowed down by the t-shirt cannon. Safety first. Hang out with me in the 500 seats.
Number 2. Remember the ill-advised shorts experiment the White Sox undertook in 1976? This is what would happen if Donna were permitted to design the uniforms.
If you're lucky. Number 3. The skybox seems like a fancy good time until Noah packs it with a bunch of exotic dancers and drug dealers and gets the place raided.
Number 4. Laura, we know you love Brenda before all others, and so do we, but we also know she will find a way to get the whole party thrown out of the stadium for Brenda stomping onto the field to argue with the umpires.
Number 5. But take heart, Laura. If you attend a baseball game at Atlanta SunTrust Park with one Brandon Walsh, you will get to see him try to beat the freeze. He will start with a huge lead, as all hopefuls do in this event, and will coast along with that smug smile of his doing that high knee kick run like he's in Damn Yankees or some shit, only to catch the toe of one of his idiotically huge toaster high tops on a crumb of warning track turf, yard sale, and be utterly humiliated by a man twice his height. There is a link in the show notes to this actually happening to a real-life Brandon Walsh. You are welcome. Happy birthday.
Laura, we hope you have a birthday both day and month as cool as the freeze.
Happy birthday, Laura!
Birthday month? Seems excessive.
On to the A plot. Dylan's got problems with Noah's new party pals. Kelly wants to lock down Matt's sperm for some reason. And Donna and David are still around dating people who aren't each other. Donna's doodles have rudely colonized the living room. Kelly says they look good, and Donna says that if they want this to be the new fall line, they should commit to it. And Kelly's like, you should commit to it. Because even though Kelly panicked about Matt and signed the lease for security, now she's backing out again. Donna is sad, but doesn't fight her. She recaps all the important stuff Kelly did to set things up, including, if I recall correctly, basically bullying Donna to doing it at all. And Kelly says that Donna got a successful business out of it, and Kelly got a husband, which seems fair. Donna mumbles that they've always had something binding them together, and that's about to end. I mean, they lived apart when Kelly was dating Brandon and before they worked together, but okay.
And when
they agree to get
cult
through this turning point with ice cream and a sappy movie, and it happens so rarely that I love it way too much when they just act like normal human female roommates.
Yes, God.
Dylan is shouldering through the crowd at the club when Noah comes up to prep him for Josie's brother, Shane, coming over to yell at Dylan about the product Josie flushed and for which she owes her dealer $90,000. Shane says if Josie doesn't give it to him, he'll kill her. And fucking Noah says he's heard of this guy and believes that he'll do it. Like, Noah is Huggy Bear now? Okay. Dylan pulls Noah aside to check if he's on coke, which Noah claims he's not. Dylan warns Noah that if he doesn't get rid of Josie and co, he's going to have a problem. And the next day, Kelly is helping Matt make a bed at the Welsh house and expositing that his brother always stays at the Four Seasons. So the brother's going to stay there and Matt's going to stay at Kelly's when there is a bedroom no one is using. Fun visit. Matt ruefully exposits that his brother's always judging him. So this trip is coming at a particularly unfortunate time for him. He's a bond trader. He lives in a huge house and his wife has a huge engagement ring. Kelly doesn't even bother telling him for the 500th time that her current ring is fine. And at this point, I don't blame her. But then the doorbell rings and Matt races off to get it with Kelly in tow. And clip five.
I think my ring is perfect.
Shut up about the fucking ring. Shut up. God. Shut up.
Yeah. Pay more attention to the fact that your husband doesn't know, your future husband doesn't know how to do his job ethically. Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Matt now says he thinks her ring is perfect too, but this is his big brother and what he thinks affects Matt. They open the door and there are Matt's brother Patrick and his wife Julianne, who apparently both flew in business suits, so I immediately hate them. Patrick does seem like a judgy finance bro, but fine, Julianne seems nice. Patrick's compliment on the house is a trap for MD to fall into by first admitting that he's only renting a room and then letting Patrick pivot to fake complain about putting in a pool at their own house. Julianne smooths things over, telling Kelly they're there to welcome her to the family, and then they move over to Matt's job, forcing him to admit that while they're all still standing in the foyer, that he's on vacation for a few days. Julianne remembers that Kelly runs a boutique, and Kelly says she does, or rather she did, and is starting to explain that she's unemployed before Matt cuts her off to say she's also on vacation. Alone at the store later, Dawn is so slammed with customers that David comes by to pitch in, and I'm not saying she's inappropriately dressed for work in her tube top, but in the one shot of her behind the counter, she looks naked, as you can see in the visual aids.
And it's Kelly breezes a lot in. Of makeup for day, even for retail.
It's very true. Kelly breezes in, wanting to talk about their future or whatever, but sees that Dawn is busy and says they'll just talk tonight. Clip six.
I can't. I'm going to the buyer's meet and greet at the design center.
You hate those things.
Well, now that I'm on my own, I have to do a lot of things I hate. Ouch. I'm sorry. I did not mean that the way it sounded. I'm just really stressed out. Look, we'll find time to talk, I promise.
Okay.
Since you're there, maybe go into the back and get that woman the small t-shirt she asked for. You're not doing anything else.
Yeah, I mean, not wanting to own the store is one thing, but like piecing out and not even helping for 2 weeks for Donna to find someone to hire to replace you is pretty shitty. But yeah. That's Kelly.
Yeah, sure is.
Donna's gone to the networking event alone and is awkwardly standing around not talking to anyone until one of the daughters from Charles in Charge comes over and introduces herself as Camille Desmond from LA Fashion. She interviewed Donna last year for a who's hot, who's not list. Donna recalls not having made either list, which Camille says was over her objections. Sure. She wanted Donna on the good list. She loves Donna's stuff and how she's marketed herself. Donna says up until now, she's been marketed by someone else, but is now there marketing herself badly. Camille wants to profile Donna, and Donna thirstily makes sure Camille will describe her as single for the three straight guys who read the magazine.
Oh, God.
Camille tells Donna that Dan Clemens is incoming. He's a huge buyer Donna's never heard of because she's bad at this job. He is even more socially awkward than Donna is, but he knows she designs sweaters. He has opinions on wool versus mohair, and she laughs and drinks wine, and it's kind of funny. I made a gif. Over dinner, Matt invites Patrick, still in his suit, to tell him about the pool. Matt claims to want details so he can know what it's like to control the universe, but Julianne changes the subject. Clip seven.
Tell us about Kelly. She seems so nice.
Shut up, Julianne.
From there, the conversation proceeds in an extremely normal manner. Clip eight.
Kelly? Yeah, she's great. Although she has decided to spend the rest of her life with me, so I guess you have to wonder, huh? She really would have loved to have been here.
We can't have a baby.
pass the breadsticks?
I mean, infertility's not funny, but that delivery is. Dude. Like,
you can't have a baby right now? We didn't even order an appetizer. Of course you can't have a baby. Oh, boy. To just, like, spit it out, though, as it were.
Yeah, true. Apparently, the Control the Universe crack touched a nerve with Patrick, who is sterile. They found out last week and have been discussing their options. They considered adoption but are looking for a sperm donor. Matt thinks that's a great idea, which is convenient since he's the donor they want.
Is he?
The next morning.
That Hamilton Law sperm. Going for $12.50 a vial on eBay. Ugh.
The next morning, Kelly lightly razzes Matt about covering for their current unemployment, and he pretty quickly recaps Patrick and Julianne's request for his sperm, adding a bit we didn't see, which is that Patrick called him the most decent person he knew. And Kelly is a bitch about it in clip 9.
I'm sure that meant a lot to you, but you can't father someone else's child.
First of all, Patrick isn't someone else.
Okay, if this was some stranger, and this could be anonymous, then I could possibly understand how you can consider this.
He's my brother, Kelly.
Which means that someday his kid will find out that his uncle is really his father. I mean, ask Donna and Gina what a brilliant idea that was.
All right, well, anyway, I told him I'd think about it, okay? And besides, you and I are a team. And whatever decisions we make, we make together.
I really don't think that there's a decision to be made here. I don't want you to do this.
He didn't ask, as I recall.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously this is a conversation you should have with your partner, but if you are the partner, I think you say it's the donor's decision and wish him the best. Like, this isn't about you. Get out of the way.
Yeah. Also, could the show please understand that parenting is not, like, biology is not destiny, parenting wise.
Yes.
Like, she's my sister. She's my daughter. Like, that's not what's happening here.
Mm-mm.
Ugh. Also, shut up, Kelly. Like, he's only said he would think about it, and that's what he's doing, and he's talking about it with you now, so how about you not be a coos for 5 seconds in a row?
Furthermore, and not to be gross, but, like, there are certainly more high-impact medical donations one can make than sperm. I'm just saying, like, he's got more. Don't worry about it. Anyway, Kelly later finds Patrick in the courtyard and mildly shades him for smoking. He announces that Matt turned him down on the sperm. Kelly says she's sorry, and when she looks up toward Matt's office, Patrick says he isn't there. Kelly faintly says that when she sees Matt, she'll tell him Patrick's looking for him, and then Patrick lays into her in clip 10.
Forgive me for being so direct, but we both know he'd do this if it weren't for you.
That's a conversation I think you need to have with him.
I already did, which is why I know it's true.
He told you that? You can resolve this without involving us.
Not in any way that we'd like.
I'm sorry that you have this problem, but it's your problem, not ours.
What? That is such a shitty thing to say. I can't believe they actually let it get into the episode. It is so over the line. Yeah. Holy shit.
And I think that they actually want us to be on her side. While, P.S., having forgotten that she may suffer from fertility issues herself.
Right.
Like, they never mention that.
Right.
And if they had mentioned that and she'd just been sort of, like, territorial or defensive or like, well, we may have a problem having children in the future and I'm just, like, freaking out that you might be giving some other couple a kid. Fine. They don't mention that.
Yeah.
It still would be super shitty of her to say this to Patrick.
Yeah.
Like, what? Are they aware of what a twat they make her look like?
I think they must be. I also had forgotten about that fertility stuff with her. So yeah, that would have been germane if there was a show.
Which is
Bible,
why it's not in here, because why would anything pertinent be in this fucking baton death march of a show?
So we take a break from them for a second. David is loafing at Donna's place when she comes out to get his take on her date look. When the doorbell rings, Donna hisses that she'd rather stay in and watch the Sopranos join the club, but it's weird. Dan at the door staring directly at her boobs. And I actually made a gif of him staring and her acknowledging the stare because it was kind of funny for both of them. She races back to get a jacket and Dan and David are standing in the doorway when a clicking noise starts. Dan has a little clicky alligator toy from his dad's factory. David is kind of rude about it. Like, it's a cute thing to do. I mean, it's a bit awkward, but, like, it's not hurting anyone. And then Donna hurries up so they can leave and get the date over with. And no sooner has David lain back down on the couch, which, go home, you don't live here, then the doorbell rings again. It's Camille wanting to tell Donna that her editor loves the story she's doing on her. Use the phone.
Call the phone.
Also, don't talk to your source at this stage in the story. I mean, it's not PR. Like, just let her know when it's published. Anyway, David is much warmer to her than he was to Dan for some reason. Just kidding. I don't know the reason. Then Kelly is waiting on the Walsh doorstep to have a fight with Matt, despite being totally in the wrong in clip 11.
I thought we were a team.
We are. Isn't Patrick here? He knows we have dinner tonight.
A team stands up for each other, makes joint decisions, protects each other.
If this is about Patrick, I told him I couldn't do it.
Yeah, and you told him that I was the reason why.
This is not about you, Kelly.
It wouldn't have been if you would have protected me. Now I'm the bad guy. I'm the reason that your brother isn't going to live happily ever after.
All right, tell me, what would you have done if you were me?
I would have taken responsibility.
Lied.
Okay, I would have lied. For you, for us, for the team. I mean, he says all those nice things about you, which I believe in, probably just to get you to say yes.
But what did I say? I said no.
And you blamed me.
Let me tell you, my whole life, I wait for my brother to reach out to me. And when he finally does, what do? I turn him away. Why? Because you asked me to.
You act like I told you not to give him a kidney or something. They can find another donor they can adopt.
He asked me for this. Like it or not, you are the reason he's not going to get it. Unbelievable. You talk about responsibility. How about you take some?
Yes! Finally!
Yeah. I really
He's
wish they had...
such a fucking bitch! Oh my god. I can't believe you blame me.
Yeah.
The fuck did you expect? You can't have it both ways. If you didn't want him to give his brother the sperm... Like, also, it's his brother. Siblings talk.
Yeah.
Idiot.
I mean, also, like, as soon as Patrick went and told his wife, like, she hates you for the rest of your lives. Like, you better hope that this engagement falls apart because she will never be your friend after this, ever.
Yeah.
Again, not to be gender essentialist about it, but sorry. That's how it would go. Like, she would,
I mean, she wouldn't be friends with you anyway because she seems, like, cool and kind. And
true.
You're a cramp.
Yeah, but I do kind of wish that they had shown us the conversation where Matt told Patrick, because then it would have changed. It would just change how we see this dispute if we could know how he framed it, because there certainly is a way that he could tell him, like, my partner is not comfortable with this. That didn't make it seem like she was locking down the sperm for herself. You know what I mean? Like, there were certainly lawyerly ways he could have massaged it, but we don't know if he just went into it and was like, Kelly said no.
Yeah. You know? Well, and I also, like, as much as we would like him to, because she's always so unreasonable and, like, that he
bitchy.
Never, stands up for himself with her. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely sure that he did try to protect her. And Patrick, being a, big dick energy guy, was like, so what's the issue? Kelly just doesn't want to do it. Is that it? And Matt probably made a bunch of faces that, because they grew up together, Patrick... I can't believe I'm talking about this in this much detail.
No, but it's true. Like, this is important stuff. This, like, you're right. Siblings talk. Like, it's you're 100% right.
But we need to not be giving it 100,000 times more thought in 2 minutes of discussion than the show spent on it at all.
All right, moving on. The next day, David is loafing around the store and making Donna tell him about her date with Weird Dan. We're supposed to think it's cute when she blurts that she kissed Dan to sell her sweaters, but it is really not. It's not cute.
No.
In this climate, TM Brooke from the other two. Anyway, David assures Donna that Dan wouldn't have bought her sweaters if he didn't think they would sell, and claims her honor is intact, but, like, consider the source, Donna.
Yeah, really.
Then Camille comes in to say that she and that we're going to be late for a movie, and Donna misunderstands and thinks she's invited. So Camille and David have to explain that David gave Camille some quotes for her Donna profile, and they then hit it off. So they are going on this date, not Donna. So then Kelly goes by the Walsh house looking for Matt and finds Patrick babysitting/doting on Maddie. Alone in the foyer with Julianne, Kelly tries to start to explain her sperm prohibition, but Julianne stops her to say she'd have felt the same way if their situations were reversed, and they get that it's nothing personal. Kelly adds that Matt was really touched that they asked him, and Julianne basically admits that Patrick had been a shithead until the setback, but now she's excited for their children to have a great father. And then we cut over to the Peach Pit, a noisy, crowded diner where Josie and Shane have decided to discuss with Noah her immediate murder due to a drug debt. She in particular is pissed that Noah promised Dylan would buy her way out of trouble, which he is not going to do. Shane asks if Noah has any family, and when he says he does, Shane says that's good because it means Noah knows how far Shane is willing to go to avenge Josie if anything happens to her. And Noah does this, clip 12.
Oh.
So I only clipped that. This is only for the real heads. So David, Dave and I have voices that we do for our two dogs, Gordon and Murray. Gordon sounds like a dumb oaf. Murray is more like the hunky corn from Clone High. She's like a Southern Belle.
Gordon Lightfoot, he talk like this. He is wondering what is going on with snacks.
But when we talk for Gordon, it's sometimes we preface what he says with a sound that's like, oh, Dave. And it's exactly the noise that Noah made. Play it again.
Oh.
Kind of, yeah.
It really is.
I know. Anyway,
I don't like it when you make fun of Doug.
Everyone be more quiet. I'm trying to sleep in Lady Dave office. It really is. I think he's sleeping on a tennis ball right now. Anyway, That's the only reason I clipped that. Sorry for that sidebar, everybody.
It's so much more interesting than this actual episode, obviously. Let's talk more about our pets.
What does it sound like when you talk for your cats, Sarah?
It depends on the cat.
Mm-hmm.
Pearl sounds sort of like Gordon.
Okay.
Because she's Eeyore, so she sounds like Eeyore.
Yeah.
Lou, I don't really know what Lou sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
But she's very, very enthusiastic and dim-witted.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it's a very yelly, like a lot of exclamation points.
Yeah. Marie's
I
like
help.
Too.
I run. I eat a birdies. Let me outside.
Yeah. That sounds like Marie. Dave, I went outside. I peed. Anyway, back to the show. Sorry, everybody. I'm not sorry at all. Noah confirms that Shane is threatening Noah, and Shane says he might need to lash out and redirect his anger. And then some other dude is also there urging Noah not to let Shane redirect his anger at him. Like, where did you even come from, dude? Noah's even more idiotic response is to say that because they threatened him, now he's not going to even try again to change Dylan's mind. Okay. The next day, Weird Dan brings flowers to Donna in the courtyard and asks if she's free for dinner that night. Thanks to his order, she barely has time to breathe, she says. He tries for that weekend. The planetarium is running a movie on the moons of Jupiter. Oh, Dan. Donna wriggles out of that one, too. It's playing for a month, so they can go anytime. This forces Donna to have to let him down gently. He's embarrassed. She didn't mean to mislead him, but now that she's on her own without Kelly, she's nervous, and if he wants to cancel his order, she gets it. He is not going to do that. He also says she's a great designer, wrong, who has terrible taste in men, true. David is fucking still loitering around the store and starts bugging Donna for details about the conversation he just watched from afar. When she has told him, David tells her everything's going to turn out fine for her, but sounds kind of bitter about it. Any more dating hell and she's going to give up altogether, she says. She's been single for 3 episodes, guys. Like, come on, Donna, get a grip.
Yeah. And David, get a job. Stop lingering around there.
Yeah. Donna suggests closing down the store. Guess she's not that nervous about making it. And going to the beach. It's January. But David already has plans with Camille. Donna is bitter about that, but lets him go. Then Kelly stops by Matt's office to try to walk back what a bitch she was about Patrick and Julianne's request. She's finally figured out that it really isn't about her, and now she wants to tell him it's okay with her if he wants to donate his sperm. So generous. Donna comes home that night to find Kelly on the couch with a sourpuss. Donna wanders off looking stung, and Kelly follows to read her something out of the magazine in her hand. Clip 13.
In addition to being incredibly talented, Donna Martin is funny and kind and devoted to the friends she grew up with. Maybe one of the reasons her design seems so genuine is because that is the perfect word to describe the designer herself. It's your friend Camille's article.
Did she mention I was single? Because she promised she'd mention that.
Donna, when guys get done reading this article, we're going to have to get an unlisted number.
Camille was getting quotes from David 2 days ago, and this is a glossy print magazine. No. That'll be out in 3 months minimum. And probably longer because it's not time sensitive because it's Donna. She's not going anywhere.
Also, everything in it is a lie.
Also, who gives a shit how nice she is? Like, talk about her designs. Who cares? This is so stupid.
Also, designs are not genuine. Yeah. Shut up, Camille.
Also, zero straight guys are going to read this article, so you're okay on the phone number,
also,
by the way.
Why are you named Camille? Why not Phyllis? Another ancient name.
Phyllis. So Kelly sits on the bed beside Donna to say how easy it is to forget what's great about your best friend, which is a rather shady thing to say when you actually unpack it. Like, I've been taking you for granted this whole time, but it turns out you're pretty cool. Fuck you. Anyway, Donna feels like she hasn't seen Kelly in weeks. They promised this wouldn't happen and agree to recommit to each other. Then Noah leaves the club after close, unconcerned about entering a dead, empty parking lot in the middle of the night, despite recent direct threats on his life. And, of course, the extra dude smashes in his back window and Shane pulls a gun on him. They pull him out of the car, announcing they're going to get all the money they need and then some, and load him into the back of a van and peel out. Oh, no? Don't kill Noah? Question mark? That's the end.
Hmm.
Who is our MVP?
Shane? Take this thing back to Baltimore.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I'm going to say Darby because she's kind of irresponsible as a nanny, but at least Steve's cock didn't change her life. So. Yeah. You know, she had fun in college and you should.
Yeah, agree.
Least valuable player. Kelly.
Kelly.
Kelly's such a bitch.
Yeah. Oh my God. Sucks.
Such a bitch. Let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, dangerous to me.
5 reasons from this episode Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. I mean, it's potentially dangerous to send your ex-girlfriend over to just some dude's house because you met him in the bar at the hotel where you live.
Yeah, it's probably bad to continue paying her hotel bill, too. Like, you guys need to have some kind of contract or lease.
Yeah.
So that this isn't so weird and fucked up.
Mm-hmm. It's bad to continue being in her life even after she tells you that she doesn't want you to. And even after we both said it was nice when you showed up at the high school dance she went to and looked really cute. That's bad of us. But, you know, everyone, there's blame for everyone there.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad for 20-somethings to be at this high school dance. And it's dangerous for him to look that hot. I'll just say it.
I think that makes 5.
I think it does. Next time on Again With This, Melrose Place Edition. Rhonda tries out for a dance troupe. Jake tries to get his GED. The rest of the complex tries to figure out if Jake and Allison boned. And we try to figure out why the IMDb entry for this episode makes literally zero mention of the Mancini spawn. You should mention reordering Malox to Alexa before you take a look at our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find those on our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com. You can see selections from the visual aids by following us on Twitter. We're at AWT90210. I'm putting the no back in Mary Kay Letourneau, Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Disputed Earring, Tara Ariano, and our producer is Unlisted Number, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
Okay. Yeah, you gotta keep that one.
Angry letters from the users to be sent to Sarah.
Sorry, you trigger sorry.
Machines by saying the magic word.
Oh, yeah.
Look, everyone can use some Malox.